from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 4 o'clock, brought to you by VenueKings.com. The Division I Council has passed the proposal in which all transfers are now eligible to play this college basketball season. Some tight ends designated to return from the IR, including Greg Olsen by the Seahawks and George Kittle by the 49ers. Bucks have placed Ronald Jones on the COVID list. No word yet if he's going to be able to play or not this weekend. Washington quarterback Alex Smith did not practice today, meaning Dwayne Haskins took the number one snaps. The Washington football team has also signed running back Lamar Miller off the practice squad from Chicago because starting running back Antonio Gibson did not practice today with turf toe. Husky quarterback Jacob Sermon has entered the transfer portal, and the Mariners with a signing. They signed right-handed pitcher Kenyon Middleton. He's got a career 3.48 ERA in four seasons with the Angels. All right, rolling into the 4 o'clock hour here. Talking a lot of football, as you might imagine, midway through December. That's what we do midway through December, is talk a lot of football. And let's hear from the grand poobah of the Seattle Seahawks, Pete Carroll, talking about that vaunted Washington defense.
Yeah, it's really the whole unit that really makes this thing move. You know, they're just loaded. They're able to play a lot of base defense and be really effective with their four-man rush, but also how they play the run too. You know, and it's built around those guys, and you know, it's a real challenge to have, you know, that kind of quality on the edge. Just makes such a difference, and Jack knows what he's doing with making those guys available for a lot of outside edge type rushing. It's what all the coaches are looking for.
We just saw that you guys have activated Greg Olsen to return to practice. What's the plan and prognosis with him for this week and probably into next week?
He's made an extraordinary recovery to get to this right now. So we're going to practice him during the week and see what happens, see how he does.
Do you think it's possible that he could actually play this week?
It is. It's possible. We'll see. We don't have any idea. He's been working out with the guys. We got to see how he does on the practice field.
Pete, Adam Schefter reported over the weekend that Brian Schottenheimer's name has been floated for the head coach opening in Houston. I'm curious what you make of him as a candidate, and have you spoken with him about the potential of getting interviews after your season?
Yeah, I think he's an incredible candidate. I think he's exactly what coaches or owners are looking for. He's been around. He's been in charge. He commands the whole team with you know, his leadership. He's got great background. And I say that because I know he's been through our program for enough years that I know that he's got his philosophy in order. He's got his approach and how he would do it, because we've worked on all that stuff. And so he's ready to go. We haven't talked about it this time around yet, but we've talked about it in the past. And I did hear that like yesterday or something like that maybe there's something up.
What is Brandon Schell's status? Are you hoping he'll be able to practice and play this week? I know you said that on Monday, but that's
where we are right now. But like, you know, these are those, I always kind of say the same thing. We'll have to wait till the end of the week to see how it develops. Can't call it now. We won't practice him today.
Their quarterback situation, I know you talked about this a couple of weeks ago with Philadelphia. I mean, you sort of just practice for the team largely, but in their case with Alex Smith and all that, I mean, obviously he's made a big difference as he's been playing. I mean, how do you sort of look at that?
Fortunately, we've seen enough of you know, both quarterbacks so we have plenty of film. So we know, you know, how they've chosen to play with them, you know, in championship situations. So that you know, we're clued in. They've got a really cool offense and style about the way they do their thing, and both quarterbacks can manage really well. The difference is Alex has just been around so much longer. You know, he's just so much more background. But both guys are talented, big arms, really quick releases on both guys, and they utilize it.
Yeah, Pete, a couple quick things. How's Josh Gordon kind of worked back into the mix? I know he hasn't had been able to practice with you, but just kind of getting back into the building. And then just at this point in the season, kind of your general thoughts on your rookie class as a whole up until this point and how they've kind of come along.
Josh's workouts are going great, and he's really fit. He feels really good. He feels like he's ready to jump on a practice field. He'll have all of this week, and then he'll be available to us next week. This is a really important week for him to finish it up and be, you know, he needs to be at game speed and game tempo and conditioning and all of that. And it's a lot to ask, but that's what we're asking. And so he's working like crazy. Ever since we had a chance, we've really stepped it up for him to make sure that he's challenged by that. As far as the rookie class, unfortunately, you know, we haven't had Daryl Taylor, which would have really been something to see, I think. But Jordan Brooks has been great, and right on down the line, our guys have just They've contributed in a big way. They've been really good attitude guys. I think it's really a statement in the last couple of years. The character and the personality of the guys that we've brought into the program have really been guys you can count on. I mean, they've given you that feeling. Freddie Swain and DJ, those guys have been remarkable additions to our team, that they could, you know, they could hold their own and play from day one without preseason and all the rest. Yeah, I just think it's been a really good group, and we're very fortunate that they're contributing and part of it.
And then at this point, do you have any optimism still that Daryl Taylor will be able to play in the regular season for you guys?
We're really running out of time. You know, next week is really the last shot for us to get a chance, and you know, he'll have to jump out then. And the treatment that he went through does kind of culminate this week. We'll see what that means. I don't mean to give you any hope at this point, other than we just got to wait and see. But it's not too late. You know, fortunately, we might have some more games to play, and if we're fortunate enough, and we'd love to have them available.
There's been a few reports that the NFL has decided not to have postseason bubbles this year. What do you think about that decision? And do you have any concerns on a league-wide basis, or do you feel confident in teams' abilities to make it work in the postseason?
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and have spoken out about that. I really think that that's the way it should go. If you've gotten this far, then, you know, you should do it the way you've been doing it. You know, who's to say that they're going to take you somewhere else and it's going to be better? You know, all along it's been on the clubs, you know, just like it was on the states. Well, it's been on the clubs the whole time to figure it out. And the league has supported us well and stayed with it. And if, you know, for this far, we should keep doing what we're doing and try to finish it off.
A lot to chew on there from Pete Carroll. The Greg Olsen situation, that's really surprising to me. I don't think I was alone in thinking that was the last that we were ever going to see of Greg Olsen in a Seahawk uniform when he went down. I mean, that just looked like see you later, man. And, you know, to be honest, at that point in the season, remember, he hadn't done particularly a lot. In fact, his most memorable play was probably the ball going through his hands against Arizona and returned for a pick six. So, but having said that, I don't know, Jackson, there's something in my mind that Kismet or whatever it is, that he worked his butt off to get back and he's going to come back. Something tells me that Greg Olsen is going to catch a huge touchdown pass between now and the end of the year, be it a fourth quarter touchdown against the Rams to win the division, or a touchdown pass in the second half of a playoff game. I don't know. It just seems like all this hard work and the fact that he's going to come back against all odds, it kind of seems like something like that's got to be down the road for him.
We didn't play it in that part of the press conference, and that's my bad for not including it, but another person asked Pete a question, I believe it was Art Teal, about Greg Olsen's, just the intensity of him to look past all the Fox broadcaster money, the millions that were waiting for him, mm-hmm. you know, to sit in a booth and talk about football rather than actually get hit on the field playing it. And Pete gave a great answer in terms of Greg's just intensity and his dedication, how he's one of the best, and that determination to play ball and get back on the field. It's amazing. And I don't need Greg to go catch touchdowns or anything, and you know, he might, and that'd be fantastic. I just want him to be the safety blanket for Russell Wilson that he was for the first, you know, eight whatever it was weeks of the season, because so many times you saw Russ want to go, whether it was deep or hit somebody, you know, over the middle, whatever, you know, for a long 15, 20 plus yard pass, and then he would just dump it over to Greg for 5, 6, 7 yards.
Right.
And that allowed, I think, Russ to cook the way he was, is just knowing in the back of his mind, I want something deep, and just be able to say, nope, I don't have it, I got Greg. And he always was able to say, I got Greg. And there was the one moment in the Patriot game where it comes off of his hands, but other than that one moment, Greg was in the underneath always for mm-hmm. 5, 6, 7 yards. And if he can come back and be that guy, that's everything I want and more for this offense that, as we talked about before, needs that running game. And then suddenly, I mean, what's missing? What's missing from a Super Bowl contender? You have the defense, you have the long-term pass, you have the long, deep passing game, you have the short passing game, you have the running game. There's nothing wrong with this team. There's nothing you can point to and say they can't make a Super Bowl because of this.
Yeah, and I would be more comfortable on a 3rd and 4 or even a must-have 4th and 3, 4th and 4, with Greg Olsen lined up out there, then, you know, I love myself some Will Dissly. Jacob Hollister's been fine, but I'll take, in a pressure situation, I'll take the double-digit year vet who's been there, done that, caught touchdowns in playoff games. So I will take that, and I will also take Josh Gordon, and he mentioned Josh Gordon. Game one of Josh Gordon's 2020 is going to come in the division championship game against the LA Rams. The Rams have not been able to scout him. They have no idea what kind of Josh Gordon, how they're going to use Josh Gordon, and that is just fine and dandy with me because I think that Greg Olsen's going to catch a big touchdown pass between now and the end of the year. Josh Gordon in that Rams game is going to catch a 3rd-and-3, like a huge 3rd-and-3, 3rd-and-6, yep, like he did in that San Francisco game last year, because he is going to be put in those situations instead of David Moore, and I think we're all going to be happy for that.
Oh, yeah, so, for sure.
4-13 on 950 KJR. Petros Papadakis talking all things college football and the mess that is the Pac-12. Oh, you got to hear Petros talk about the Pac-12. He loves hammering it next on 950 KJR.
It's time for our weekly conversation with college football analyst Petros Papadakis. Brought to you by Hendrickus Organics. For a 100% organic lawn renovation, go to HendrickusOrganics.com. Now with Petros, here's Dave Softy Mahler.
Softy and Dick without the soft one today. Hendrickus Organics brings us Petros Papadakis, one of the few times over the course of the year where I get to talk to my friend Petros, because Softy hoards them all to himself. Hi, Petros. How are you?
What's poppin', Dick? How's everything going? Nice to talk to you. Great day to be together on the radio. Hello to Seattle and the surrounding area, Snohomish, everybody.
There you go. I like the Snohomish plug there. That was all of our friends up in the Everett area like that. But hey, Petros, we saw a heck of a football game this last week between the two LA schools, to the point where John Wilner said it was the two best teams in the Pac-12 playing in that football game. Do you buy that, or do you think there is a better team out there, be it Washington, be it Oregon, or be it someone else than UCLA?
Well, I think the Dogs or Oregon would have a say there, but I definitely think UCLA's improved a great deal, and they are certainly the best team USC had faced thus far, but USC's opponent's record, I think after that win, was 5-15 on the year. I mean, let's just call it what it is. The Pac-12 South was the worst division in the Power 5, in the worst conference in the Power 5. And USC did not play Colorado or Washington State, who they had on the schedule. So USC is definitely the most talented team in the conference. I don't think there's any beef about that, and you might be able to make a case that UCLA is second most talented. But I think Washington overall, especially with the way their defense is, would or could have a say in a year where no one's going to really get to have a say except for Oregon, obviously. So it's a hard time to have all these arguments, and I guess it's just what it's going to be. We tried way too hard to find a way to play while we started way too late and had tougher protocol than everybody else. And the West Coast is finishing with a fizzle.
Yeah, no question about it. Did we dodge a bullet, though, by Colorado losing? I mean, because, you know, I think a lot of people would admit that Colorado at least should have had a legitimate shot at a Pac-12 championship had they finished undefeated, but they didn't finish undefeated. So do you think the Pac-12 would have even changed the rules potentially if USC and Colorado would have both finished the season undefeated?
No, I think the Pac-12 is as tone deaf as ever, and that Larry Scott is right now about whether or not he has support, trying to talk about his contract extension as opposed to trying the most fair way to get it done. I mean, dodge a bullet. You're probably right, Dick. They would have gotten hammered nationally more than they've already been hammered nationally. But Kirk Herbstreit already went on TV and called the American a more respectable conference than the Pac-12. And we deserve it. We started way too late, even though we had the testing long before even the Big Ten. And we then had protocol that was too difficult for the teams to follow to field the team. So we not only made it incredibly difficult for our teams, but we started too late where there was no makeup games and no ability for wiggle room now that we're down the stretch and staring at a giant Christmas tree or a menorah or whatever you celebrate. It's getting cold outside and it's freaking mid-December. So it's an unfortunate situation. I hate to be so negative, but that's kind of where we're at. I love seeing our brands on the field and what they look like when they're competing. Mm-hmm. It's better than not playing, obviously, the few games that we got in, but that's all we were doing. When we started later than everybody else, unless you have a Buckeye on your helmet, you're screwed as far as national recognition goes.
So what would be the best case scenario for the Pac-12? I would think that everybody in the entire conference, unless you wear a big green O on your head, should be rooting for USC. Even you, Petro, should be rooting for USC to win this week, to win the Fiesta Bowl, to give us at least one top 10 team in the country when the season is over. Is that probably the best avenue for at least some respect for this conference?
I mean, I guess it goes to show that people are excited at all about USC. I don't know if they've actually watched a USC game on the East Coast. I'm not kidding. If they are, it just goes to show you how powerful that brand is,
right?
And how badly the West Coast needs USC to be competitive with the Alabamas and Ohio States of the world. Who would they play in the Fiesta Bowl, Dick?
Well, they'd probably play Northwestern.
Okay, well,
potentially.
If you beat Northwestern in the Fiesta Bowl and you feel good about yourself going into 2021, I mean, they would be able to sell that. I mean, there's no doubt about that. And there would be a lot of guys drafted off that team if they're eligible to be drafted. But at the same time, you know, that's not the big picture. The big picture is the Pac-12 is dying for two reasons. We have horrible leadership. They need to make a change and find a way to remove the conference commissioner,
yep.
Find out whether or not he has the support of the presidents. There's only, I think, two of the old guard, Gene Block and Crow at Arizona State, left that support Larry Scott. So that needs to happen, and USC needs to be relevant, not against Northwestern and not against Arizona. They need to be relevant against Notre Dame, Alabama, and Ohio State. And I don't think you believe that they are. They certainly, in my opinion, as a football analyst, having called one of their games this year also, they are not. So until that happens, the Pac-12 is in a grave. I love the Pac-12, but we are not respected nationally right now, and USC pushing around the fighting Reese Davis is probably not going to change that.
Exactly. Whether it's Northwestern, I'm seeing Indiana also as a projection. So it's not going to be a big name school. So I guess Washington may have a pretty darn good opportunity to carry the mantle for the conference even more than USC. If Washington ends up playing Oklahoma, like I've seen multiple people project, that's at least a game that has got some juice to it.
Yeah, I'd like to see the Washington defense play a team like USC. I'd like to see those guys like McDuffie and Molden match up against Amon-Ra St. Brown and Drake London. We didn't get to see it this year. Maybe we will next year, not with Amon-Ra, but maybe with Drake. I'd like to see them match up with Oklahoma's skill and Lincoln Riley's offense. I really would enjoy that. Didn't get to see enough of it this year. Nobody did. And Jimmy Lake really didn't get a chance to develop his team. And that's kind of the tough part about this. You know, doing these games over the last few months, it's like, I think, wow, well, this team, if all these guys stay, they'll be pretty good next year. And this team, well, they'll be pretty good next year. And then I remember, well, the Big 12 and all they've all played a full season with the same exemptions. Like, they're still going to be developing much more rapidly. Everybody, the ACC, the American, the Big 12, and the SEC, and not the Pac-12 and the Big Ten kind of cut off its own nose. But then they have we would be like the Big Ten if USC was performing at the level that you need them to for the Pac-12 to be relevant. Because they have Ohio State, the Big Ten does. So it's kind of the same, except there's no pyramid with a little eye on top floating on top of our conference pyramid. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep, there's no question. I mean, did you realize the burden for shutting games down was going to be this low? Because I had no idea. I was very confident. No. I bought into the whole Larry Scott, Pac-12 president BS that was like, oh, this is going to be the safest conference in America. We've got it all figured out. And yet, now because the burden was so low, hell, Cal had two games canceled because of one positive test. Had I known that was going to happen, there's no way I thought they'd be successful this fall.
Dick, I was sitting in the studio. Now, granted, I wasn't in Pullman, and I'm just a broadcast idiot, but my heart really breaks for the players and the coaches in that order. But I've never seen a team pack up and leave in a Division I college football game. Yep. I've never seen a team just pack up their stuff and roll out after getting on the plane, going in the hotel, doing all the meetings. It boggled my mind. In a way, it was almost like watching, I don't want to say a train wreck or something, because nobody died, but it was kind of horrifying as a football person, because you and I both know, after doing this for decades, it's like, it takes a lot to cancel a football game before this year, right?
Yeah, like, before this year it did, absolutely.
Right. Like, let's say a car hits me on the way to the stadium and I die. They're going to kick it off. Like, they might kick it off if a coach died or something like that. It's hard to get a football game canceled. Really hard. And I remember when Oregon State, like McNeese, got canceled maybe 10 years ago. And because of one of the hurricanes, and then they had to move it, and it was like, oh my God, this is unbelievable that they moved this game to later in the year. How did they pull it off? And it was like, you know, putting a comma in a sentence all morning and then taking the whole afternoon to remove it. And now it's just like, Cal packed up their stuff and got on a bus and left. My mouth is still agape. So nothing surprises me anymore. But, yeah, our protocol was BS. We made it too difficult for the teams to navigate. The SEC, whether you believe it's right or wrong, the SEC, the ACC, the American Conference USA, they all, Big 12, they all played full seasons. They're all wagging their junk in the faces of everybody out here. They all pushed forward when the football programs out here weren't willing. And it sets us back. Whether you think that's right or wrong, that's where we are. And we were already back.
Petros Papadakis is joining us. Final few minutes brought to you by Hendrickus Organics. Auburn made a big move, firing Gus Malzahn, and there's rumors about Mario Cristobal. He had to take to Twitter yesterday to kind of, I don't even know if he quelled the rumors, to be perfectly honest with you, in the 45-second statement that he made from his office yesterday. You know, first of all, how do you justify a $21 million buyout to the coach in the middle of a pandemic instead of just kind of sticking with him for another year or two amidst the college athletics crisis that we're having? And then secondly, what are the odds that Mario heads back to the SEC?
Well, whose $21 million was it?
Auburn's.
Well, no, it's some donor loves Auburn.
Yeah,
right?
That's true.
So that's who it is. I mean, think about Washington's biggest donor. I mean, I know who paid. You think UCLA, the UC system, went out and got Chip Kelly for UCLA a couple years ago? Hell no.
That's true.
Wasserman did.
Yeah, it's just guys that are calling up saying, get rid of this guy and I'll pay the freight for it. Because what you're saying is that money's not going into the budget of the university's athletic department
if they don't
decide to fire him.
Right. That's what. Why do you think? You think Lane Kiffin got fired on a tarmac because Pat Hayden got fed up? No, it was because a billionaire got fed up and said, I'll pay it. Do it now.
Right.
You know, because they get frustrated watching the game and they just write a check because it doesn't mean anything to them in that way. And I've seen it happen on many occasions, and that's what happened here. So, I mean, you can, your argument about firing a guy during a pandemic still holds up. I mean, it's a whole staff of people that have to be relocated and paid off and all that, but if somebody's paying the freight. So if I'm Mario Cristobal, and maybe I've hit my ceiling at Oregon and used the place to get a better job, like Willie Taggart did. It didn't work out, but he got a better job out of it and failed. But I'd knock the duck off the motorcycle, hop on it, and drive it out to the plains and try to get that job. They have money to spend, and it'll set you up for the rest of your life. So if I'm Cristobal, I take a serious look at them taking a serious look at me and try to do what they did in that Steve Miller song, which is take the money and run.
That's right.
Clap, 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 clap.
I asked Wilner yesterday if as a Husky fan, I even wanted Cristobal to leave or if I wanted him to stay at Oregon. And he gave me an interesting answer. I'd love to get your take on this. He said, all right, which would you prefer, Cristobal at Oregon and Wilcox at Cal, or Wilcox at Cal, or excuse me, or Wilcox at Oregon and Cristobal gone? And I had to think about that for a second, and I'm not sure the answer, because I think Wilcox's ceiling at Oregon might be higher than Cristobal's.
Wilcox is a really good coach, and he's really a great secondary coach. And the longer he's at Cal, the more time will be. I don't think he'll win 10 games a year, but I think that they'll project a couple years at a time for having really good teams.
Yep.
Oregon is going to be talented. They're going to be flashy. They're going to get recruits. And with Cristobal, they're going to be physical on the line of scrimmage. And, you know, it's interesting. Cristobal's not very well paid at Oregon. They certainly have the money to make him stay there forever. But if I'm an Oregon guy, I kind of shrug my shoulders at that and say, okay, like, I mean, I know they won the Rose Bowl, but you look at what Justin Herbert's done this year and you wonder why they didn't let him throw it downfield at all. Right. And I'm an angry running back type of guy. You know, I like the style that he played. But you watch Herbert with the Chargers and you say, good God. I mean, this guy, he can throw it downfield like one of the top four quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And now a year ago, he was in an Oregon uniform, and we didn't see much of this at all. And they still won a Rose Bowl. So you just kind of wonder if he's a little too conservative and maybe a little too one-dimensional. But if that's the case and Auburn wants to pay him, then, hey, have fun, Chizik. Go for it.
Hey, Petros, always a pleasure. I'm glad I got the chance to talk to you. Take next week off, and Softy will chat with you in a couple weeks, man. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, everything to everybody. Happy holidays, and thank you for downloading and listening live on the iHeartRadio app and listening terrestrially to our interviews. And thank you for having me as part of your show and part of your day. I don't take it for granted, even though I sound like an a-hole most of the time.
We love you, man. Thanks, Petros. We'll talk to you.
See you, guys.
Petros Papadakis will be back with some testimonials. What have been the best and worst things in sports from 2020, in your opinion? 49451, that's coming up next right here on 950.
Thank you for doing your part.
Coming to you live from the Elliott Avenue studios of Sports Radio 950 KJR. This is Textimonials.
LOL, semicolon, parentheses.
Take it away, Dave Softy Mahler and Dick Fain.
Softy and Dick without the soft one today on this just miserable, miserable day. My gosh, Jackson, I just looked outside before Petros came on, so it would have been, what, 4:15? It looked like 9:30 at night. It's just so dark out there.
Get us to March.
Exactly. Get us to March indeed. All right. Textimonials 49451. We've been asking you today the best sports moment or best thing. Could be an individual moment or a big picture thing that happened in 2020 in your mind, and also what's the worst. So, Jackson, what do we got?
Best moment has to be DK's chase down. Mm. Worst moments are the Apple Cup and Oregon games being canceled.
Yeah, I mean, that DK, as far as most memorable moments, things we're going to remember, you know, 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're always going to visualize DK running down Buda Baker. There's no question about that. And then, you know, the cancellations, yeah, I just think from a Husky standpoint, obviously the Oregon cancellation, much, 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 much worse than the Washington State cancellation, just because it cost you a trip to the Pac-12 championship game, or the back-to-back cancellations, rather, in the Oregon game and the Pac-12 championship game. And also, I think that Husky fans are so geared towards beating Oregon now, and that's kind of like public enemy number one, that I don't think the Apple Cup cancellation is as much of a bummer for Dog fans, I think, as it is for Coug fans, because naturally the Cougs want to prove that it was a Mike Leach thing, right? I mean, they want to prove that the Apple Cup failures were an air raid Mike Leach thing, and they're not going to carry over to Nick Rolovich. What's next?
Kobe Bryant was the worst thing. Best was Dame Dollar's bubble games.
Yeah, the Kobe thing, Jackson. I mean, it doesn't even seem like it happened this year, right?
I mean, it happened in, what was it, I think February, right? Or
January,
January, right? Even? I mean, that just seems like a decade ago at this point. And I remember I listed like March 11th, the whole like everything shutting down as my worst thing. That's, if I'm being honest, that's the worst thing. Because that hit us like a ton of bricks, like no other sports-related death, I think, really ever has.
Yeah, I'll always remember where I was. I mean, I was in church and my phone started blowing up.
Sorry, it was a Sunday.
Yeah, my phone started blowing up, and the first one was from Softy, and he was like, "Did you see the Kobe news?" That's all he said. And then I didn't respond. I'm in church. I'm not going to start texting. And I put my phone back in my pocket, and I got like four or five more buzzes in the next 10 minutes. I'm like, I'm not gonna be on my phone. I was sitting in like the second row too, so like it was very conspicuous if I keep getting my phone out. And first thing, the pastor finishes up. He is a huge Laker fan.
Oh.
Pastor finishes up, makes literally a beeline to me, and he was like, "Did you hear about Kobe?" And I was like, "I got a text. I have no idea what's going on." And he was like, "I don't know if I can go greet the people leaving here. I think I'm about ready to cry." After he told me it was just crazy.
And then the fact that Gigi, I mean, like that was the kicker. And then the day of, remember, it was like during the Pro Bowl, we were getting like inconsistent information.
Yes.
We didn't know who, what exactly happened. And then, that was the hard part.
Absolutely. What's next?
Most memorable is Andy Reid finally winning a Super Bowl. Worst, by far, is March Madness being canceled.
March Madness, man. My favorite. That and the Masters, my two favorite sporting events of the year. I eventually got one 6 months six months late, but I never got March Madness. And that texter sounds like a Chiefs fan, because I don't think there's a ton of fans. I mean, hey, we all like Andy Reid, right? He's Holmgren's guy. It was nice to see him win a Super Bowl, but I don't think a lot of fans around here are going to put Andy Reid finally getting a Super Bowl championship on their 2020 list.
They were so close. So close.
So close. So close. Yes, now if you put it that way.
Yeah, right.
Now, if the texture would have instead of said Andy Reid winning his first championship, watching the Niners blow a double-digit fourth-quarter lead in the Super Bowl, that I'm all for, man. I can buy that for a dollar, no question about it. What's next?
Worst thing was being in Vegas for March Madness with nothing to bet on or a short Mariner season. Best is that I still got an NFL season.
Yeah, the NFL season to me, and that's kind of what I brought up at the beginning of the show. Not only that we got an NFL season, but we got as normal an NFL season as I think anybody, even the most optimistic people, probably did not think that going into week 15 of the NFL football season, every single team would have played the same number of games. I mean, that is just an absolutely phenomenal job from top down. Say what you want about Roger Goodell. He pushed it through. It's worked. Teams have done a great job for the most part. We've had situations like Baltimore and we're getting pushed back games 3, 4, 5 days, past when they were supposed to play, but they have gotten it all done, something that college football has just failed to do, and part of the reason, obviously, is the Pac-12s and the Big Ten's unwillingness to start a football season when the virus was actually contained more than it is now. And, boy, just really, really, you see the positives and the negatives of those two football decisions. What's next?
Kyle Lewis being the rookie of the year is best. No Beer Gardens is the worst.
Sounds like that's a big-time Mariner fan right there. You know, that, I couldn't wrap my arms around the baseball season, Jackson. I just could not do it. It, to me, it was just too short and insignificant. The 50-60 game season, I just couldn't do it.
And not to mention the fact that we knew going into the season that the Mariners weren't going to be contenders, even in 60 games. It wasn't going to happen for this team. They're still trying to build up for 21-22. So it was both of those combined. And you followed along and you saw the stats and you saw how the highlights, and the Mariners did a fantastic job of pushing Kyle Lewis as the thing to keep your interest, but there just wasn't really anything other than Kyle Lewis.
That being said, I sent a tweet out today, and I'll read it for you verbatim.
You saw a tweet? I saw your tweet.
You saw my tweet? I know it's not a popular take, but I'm kind of fired up for the Mariners this year.
Yeah.
Shh, don't tell anyone.
Yeah, right? Right?
Yeah, I am fired up, maybe, and partly because of the fact that we had an insignificant season this last year, so this will be the first, real 162, or at least close to 162 game season. The Mariners are another year out, removed from their rebuilding process. We're starting to see Jerry actually bring major league players in instead of sending major league players away. So yeah, I'm kind of fired up for this 2021 season. What's next?
Yeah,
I think the SEC pretty much controls college football, and the commissioner of the Pac-12 is doing his best to eliminate football in the Pac-12.
He said, who's controlling college football?
SEC is controlling, and the Pac-12, Larry Scott's doing everything he can to not have college football.
Well, he is certainly doing a good job at that. And I thought Petros raised an interesting point in the last segment when he said, hey, nobody's talking about the fact that the Pac-12 now is falling even further behind these other conferences because they're only playing 5-6 games instead of 12. I mean, think about that. I didn't even really thought about that part of it. I thought about it for the 2020, the implications on the 2020 season. Certainly we've seen the Pac-12 playing half the games of the SEC. It's just ridiculous. But how much does that hurt this conference going forward that these guys only played 6 games and their competitors 2,000 miles away are playing a full 12 game season?
There's only one thing I think that could sort of and not 100% rehabilitate the image right now, and that's if USC was to make the Fiesta Bowl or a big New Year's Bowl and then get a big win, because then it's like, oh yeah, that's right, USC's good. Because it's dead on that what you guys were saying was a good USC is good for the Pac-12, because everybody then looks on the national scale and go, oh yeah, okay, USC, they're back, and look at the USC in their heyday about just a decade and a half ago, right? And everybody's has their eyes on the Pac-12, so we need the eyes on this conference again. Yeah. Unfortunately, it just involves the Trojans.
Well, and they should bring back a ton of guys next year, and I truly believe that how you finish one year is how you're ranked the next.
Yep.
And if USC, it could be the same exact team, right? But if USC loses this week and doesn't go, where they're going to be ranked in the preseason poll next year is going to be significantly lower than if they win this game and win the Fiesta Bowl.
Yep.
And finish 7th or 8th in America. They're going to be a top 10 preseason team next year, so you can say, hey, at least at the beginning of the season, hey, look at the Pac-12. USC's ranked 7th or 8th, and that is good for the conference. Plus, they're playing Oregon, so I have no issues rooting for USC at all on Friday. 4:55 on 950 KJR. Let's talk a little recruiting, shall we? This is a big recruiting day, which kind of gets lost in the middle of the NFL going on when now that it's in December. But our friend Chris Fetters, Dogman.com, going to join us coming up next on 950.